today on Richard Ellis Talks.
If you make meddling your whole life, you're in trouble. Because if you get that medal, you get that Super Bowl ring, you get that prize that you thought was everything, and you have it, and all of a sudden there's this emptiness, you're in a heap of trouble. Because what was supposed to give you everything, complete satisfaction and reward and accomplishment, I finally made it, is nothing.
You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is unlike anyone else, where he shares the life-changing message of the gospel in a way that's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. We know that life is pretty challenging these days, but these talks will help you meet those challenges head-on with biblical truth, encouragement, and direction. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellis.com. So, let's jump right in with today's talk. Here is Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Eyes on the Prize, and I'd like you to turn to the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and we're going to start with probably about verse 19 and move through this and go to the last few verses. I found some little research and found that these words were spelled out in lights at the 18th Olympics at Tokyo in 1964. And this is what they spelled out in lights. The most important thing in the Olympic Games is not to win, but to take part. Just as the most important thing in life is not the triumph, but the struggle. The essential thing is to have fought well. And this morning I want to show you some scriptures and maybe show you the scriptures how it's not just the fight, but it really is tied to the winning. It's about keeping your eyes on the prize and understanding what that is. Now, Paul is writing here to a church in Corinth. He's written different things to different churches, but a lot of the same principles. And just for the context and some background here, let me just begin with 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19. And he says, "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win the more. And to the Jews I became as a Jew that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men that I might by all means save some." Not meaning here that he would save anybody. Nobody saves anybody but Jesus, but see people saved. "Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I may be partaker of it with you." Now he talks about how he relates to other people here, first of all. If you're around different kind of people, you say, well, you're being a chameleon then. You're changing to meet the situation. Well, in some ways, yes. You get around a certain group of people, you got to be sensitive to their background. I went to a day seminar a couple of weeks ago to understand the Latin culture, because there are things that I can say as a Caucasian, a white American male, that I might say to a Latin male or a female for that matter, and be completely inappropriate. And you say, well, this is America, they just need to get over it. Well, that's probably what the Indians said to us when we got here. And somehow we think that we own the place, and now everybody who comes, like everyone, most of the people in this room came from somewhere else, and we had to assimilate into a society. But Paul says, you know what, I'm not going to just say, hey, it's about me, forget you. I'm going to adjust whatever it is. If it's somebody who's Jewish, I'll adjust to their customs and try to fit in a little bit so I can relate to them and communicate them. And he sums it all up, no matter what the category. He says, I've become all things to all men. Why? That I might by all means save some. The point is reaching the people, so not putting hindrances in the way. Now, the next paragraph, beginning of verse 24, he gives it a very interesting analogy. And if you've ever watched the Winter or Summer Olympics or any kind of competitive deal, I mean, there's all kind of world games, but these are kind of the big ones usually. Verse 24 says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives a prize?" And the fascinating thing to me about this whole Olympic or competitive process is that these people train their entire lives for a matter of literally seconds. Start when they're 5 or 3 or whatever it may be, and devote time, their families, tremendous sacrifices made to do what? Run a race, ski a race, perform something to compete and win. And Paul points out a really no-brainer thing, but it's true. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Run to win. Now, I'm going to kind of back into this maybe a little bit, but I want you to ask yourself, what is the prize? What is it that you're after? Because some of you are running in a race. It just may be you're running in the wrong race. And your race is, I'm going to get married. I'm going to have some kids. We're going to buy a house in the suburbs and get out of downtown. I'm going to escape everything. I'm going to have a country club membership, whatever you think it is, a nice car, this job, and I'm going to get the corner office. You know, people have screwy ideas about what success is. And you're running that race. And you may win that race, but you may get to that finish line and go, oh my gosh, what have I done? I've wasted my entire life running a race that I've won, but I've really lost. Because I've gained the whole world, but I've lost my life, my soul. And it's not been worth it. Make sure you're running the right race. And by the end, hopefully we'll see what that race is and what the prize really is. And if you go back to the original Olympic Games, the competitions, all they were going for was this little kind of laurel wreath crown looking thing that they would take. The winner would come up and the person would place it on their head and everybody would cheer, they're the winner. It wasn't even a gold medal, but it was the recognition. It was the prize. It was saying, I'm the best, I won. Somehow, somewhere down the line, somebody saying, you did it, you won, you're the best. So everyone who competes for this prize is temperate. Now let me read you the definition of this word temperate. To be self-controlled, continent. To exhibit self-government, conduct oneself temperately, in a figure drawn from athletes who, in preparing themselves for the games, abstain from unwholesome food, wine, and sexual indulgence. They cut out anything that would cause any hindrance to them performing to their maximum and being who God wanted them to be, or forget God. In this case, it's about God. There is just winning. They would do anything, lay aside anything to hit the target. So he says, everyone who competes for this prize is temperate in all things. Now, let me tell you, it's not going to take you long to figure out if you're going to win. I'm not talking about this do's and don'ts of Christianity. I talked to a friend this week. I've been praying about, she's been trying to quit smoking for years. Is she going to go to hell for smoking? No, she's not going to hell. She may get to heaven a lot quicker than normal, but she's not going to hell for smoking. But there were other things in her life that were going on, and this is a process. And God comes along, the Holy Spirit inside you, if you're a Christian, and says, hey, what about this area? This has got to go. It's slowing you down. It's maybe physically killing you. And he begins to refine you and define the prize more and more. And you say, you know what? I'll lay this down. I'll quit this. I'll let this go. But it's not in an attempt to get God's blessing or get God to love you. It's because he's working in you and through you and changing you and giving you a desire to know him and want him more than anything. And there are these encumbrances that are on your life. So he says, everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it for what reason? And I described this crown back then. They do it to obtain a perishable crown. In other words, a laurel wreath that's going to wither and die. But we for an imperishable crown. All those metals sooner or later are rust. You give them time, they'll rust. They'll decay. They'll wear out. And as awesome as it is, you know, I've watched many of these guys, men and women, stand on that stand, and that medal is given to them, and you look in their eyes, and you could almost see every once in a while, and later you hear some of these athletes talk about this, they thought that was it. I'm going to get that gold medal. That's it. And if I just get that gold medal, man, I'm going to have everything. Somebody puts that medal around their neck, they look down, they kiss it, which is always fascinating to me, they're kissing this medal. And then it hangs there, and then what hits me is, so, now what you going to do? Now where are you going? Now you got a gold medal. What are you going to do now? You don't go to Disney World all you want, but that ain't going to fix it either. They have what they spent their whole life trying to get, and now what are they known for? A gold medal. And everywhere they go, and you know what? Getting another gold medal now becomes the addiction. Now I'm going to come back in 4 years and get another one. And then 4 years later, I'm going to get another one. You know what? Some of those people never get one of those medals. If you make meddling your whole life, and there's a lot of people making another kind of meddling their whole life, but that's another sermon. If you make meddling your whole life, you're in trouble. Because if you get that medal, you get that Super Bowl ring, you get that prize that you thought was everything, and you have it, and all of a sudden there's this emptiness, you're in a heap of trouble. Because what was supposed to give you everything, complete satisfaction and reward and accomplishment, I finally made it, is nothing. It's all vanity, as the scripture says. So he says, they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore, this is Paul talking, he says, therefore I run like this, thus, not with uncertainty. This isn't about going out for a jog. This is going out and running a race. Now, there's a big difference. Even people you talk to that are training for a race, you say, well, they're out jogging. No, they're out running, because you usually don't run any better in the race than you do in practice, right? But I mean, coaches told me that. You don't play any better in the game than you do in practice if you haven't prepared. So you try to distract the guy. Say, hey, forget running this morning. Let's go have breakfast and eat some bacon and eggs and cheese and whatever else you think is going to mess them up. They say, you know what? Maybe another day I got to run this morning. They are running every day or whatever they run with a goal in mind, with a prize in mind. They got their eyes on the prize and they're headed that direction. So he says, I run. Paul says, I run not with uncertainty. And then he takes another analogy here of not running, but fighting, boxing, which has been going on for millennia, I guess. He says, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. I'm not shadow boxing. I'm not just messing around. I'm sparring, getting ready, or I'm ready to fight literally. This is not just a punch in the air as he describes it here. I fight not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. Now, this is not talking about him losing his salvation. It's about him kind of saying something like, hey, come to the games and let's compete. But he can't compete because he hasn't abided by the rules. He hasn't done what he was supposed to do to be able to be in the game as well. Now, let me give you some words here on this. I discipline my body. One buffets his body, handles it roughly, disciplined by hardships, metaphorically to give one intolerable annoyance, to beat one out, wear one out by entreaties. It's kind of like sparring. You know, you get in a ring with somebody, even if you've got pads on, if you've ever boxed and been hit by somebody, it feels like a fight. It's intended to because it's preparing you for the fight. So he says, I'm working out all the time. I'm working my body out. I'm taking these blows all the time to remember that this is a battle, that it is a fight. There's a competition here that I want to win, and it's not just stepping in the ring haphazardly. I've said this before. For some reason, I never forget this quote. A friend of mine that I've known for years committed a white-collar crime, ended up in jail for a long time. It tore his family apart. And one day, it was something he speaks and shares this. He said, Richard, you can't cram for a crisis. You can't cram for a crisis. And if you have not been working out every day spiritually, you've not been training every day spiritually, you've not been in the groove, some crisis comes in your life, you go, oh God, help me box well today, and you get knocked down. God, help me run today. You can't cram, guys. You've got to start day after day after day. And let me tell you something. The race is coming. You're in the race whether you know it or not. The fight is coming. It's a battle every day. And you've got to decide what you're going to do about it and how you're going to do it. So he says, like a boxer, I buffet my body. I stay aware of these things, these challenges that I have in my life. The word he uses there about being cast away or that he would be rejected in the last part of that verse, he says, I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. The word here, disqualified, simply means this, not standing the test, not approved, unfit for, unproved, spurious, reprobate, not prepared, can't stand the test. You come into church like this, or you hear a tape or radio or TV or in a Bible study, and you hear something, you go, wow, that's what I need to do. And you get all excited, pumped up. Man, that's going to change my life. You go out and get in the car, and you turn the radio on and get distracted. And before you know it, you're right back where you were. God says, let's start working out. And you say, well, maybe someday. And you go back to doing whatever you're doing. Go, you know, eat some chips and pray about it. But every once in a while, there are people who hear something and you stop and you go, you know what? If I don't do something about this, I'm going to die. My life is going to be destroyed. I'm going to go the completely wrong direction. I got to do something about this. And it takes. The seed takes root and starts to grow and produce fruit in your life. You make a decision. Listening to truth will not change you. It's applying truth that you listen to. That's where your life will change. Now, people get confused here and say, well, if I don't finish, do I go to hell if I'm a Christian? No. It's just that there's a whole sense here in the scriptures where there's going to be, it talks about a crown of life, a crown of glory, a crown of righteousness. There's going to be an award ceremony in heaven someday. And he's going to hand out these crowns. And you're going to get a crown for winning, for being faithful, for finishing. Does it mean you won't get in heaven? No, it just means you'll be watching. Maybe not getting the crowns. There is reason to run like you're trying to win, not trying to beat somebody else down, but run the race that you have. There's a verse I'll read here in just a minute. Let me read you something that Warren Wiersbe wrote. Paul's fear of becoming a castaway had nothing to do with his salvation. He is not talking about salvation, but Christian service. We are not saved by running the race and winning. We run the race because we are saved. That's why you run the race, because your life has been changed. He gives you a new heart, a new life, a new desire to do what he wants to go. Let me read you something out of Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Verse 13, enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Now guys, listen to me. There are few who find this life. You say, well, I thought it was supposed to be so easy. Receiving a gift is one thing. Doing something with it is another. And there are just a lot of people who look at the broad way, the high way, and say, you know what? That's the easy way. Let's go that way. That seems so much simpler. Let's just do that. It's easier not to train. It's easier not to be disciplined. It's easier not to live with some self-control in your life. But you know what? It'll affect your life. And you've got to pick a lane here. And he says, verse 14, narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Now, is that to be a discouraging word? No. It means look for that narrow gate. Look for that way that may not be the road traveled by the most people, but it's worth it. And there is a prize at the end of that road. That's where the treasure is. Another passage, Philippians chapter 3. Paul's talking about his life here again in Philippians to another church he's writing to, another city. Verse 12, Philippians 3:12, he says this, not that I have already attained or am already perfected, but I press on that I may lay hold of that for which Christ has also laid hold of me. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended or I haven't made it yet, but one thing I do. Now look at the way he presses on. Literally, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Now let me tell you something. Jesus is not at the end of the finish line. He is the finish line. When you hit the finish line, you hit Him. He is it. He is the race, He's the finish line, He's the strength, He is everything you're ever going to need to get this done. But Paul says in his life, he says, I can't do anything about the past. Some of you guys are so busy looking back at what could have been, what you could have done, what happened, well, if this hadn't happened to me. I heard a black gentleman last night, I went home still wound up, turned on this dialogue of Black History Month and this panel of black leaders talking, and one of them, a congressman, stood up. He said, you know what? Somebody brought up about single moms, and that, you know, I was born to a single mom and I'm black. He said, you know what? They're white single. I said, you can't live in your past. There are a lot of people born into single mom families. Get over it. Get a life. Get some help. Get into part of a church or something and move forward. You can't change the past. Say, God, that's where I was born. That's where I came from. But I've got opportunity like everybody else. And I'm going to take advantage of it. And you help me, God, to not focus on where just I came from. I can't do anything about that. But where am I going? An awesome thing, sometimes you watch in these races where it really is about competition in a healthy way. Bunch of runners are going and some guy falls and someone will stop and maybe even risk losing the race to help somebody else who's down get up and finish that race. That's what this is about. You say, well, I might lose. No, you're going to win because you're helping them win too. Get down there, help them, and keep moving. But don't blame your future and the lack thereof on your past. Paul had a past. You'll never compete with his past. He had gotten people killed. He was a terrorist. But he says, I can't do anything about that. I'm reaching forward to those things that are ahead. I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, and he describes here, if you go back and read the chapter before, the chapter 11, he goes and names a bunch of different people who have gone on, men of faith, women of faith, some who were very successful in their life, some of them who were, had so much faith that got them killed. They were sawed in two, stoned. Terrible things happened to them. But he says, these are people that have gone before us, this great cloud of witnesses. And the description here is kind of like a stadium, the clouds filled with these people observing us in the race, coming behind them, competing. It's like they were in previous Olympics and here we come and we're competing. Now, they're watching this. He says, since we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Don't run my race. You can't run my race. Run the race that is set before you and lay down anything that's going to slow you down. I watch these competitors, whether it's in the Winter or Summer Olympics, and if you see them now, they've got this down to a science. Even the swimmers have these wetsuits on with grooves in them that the water, when their hands and arms and legs go through, the water flows off of them so they can go as fast as they can. Skaters have these body suits on, aerodynamic glasses. Skiers have helmets on with points so that the air goes by. They're taking everything off they can to hit maximum speed and win. You've got to lay it down. It may be a relationship. You've got to let it go. If it's not godly and He's told you in your heart, let it go, let it go. Maybe it's a job. You're in a job and God's told you to quit for years and you won't trust Him and get out of there because He's got something better for you. Let it go. Put it down. And in particular here, He says, laying aside that sin that so easily besets you. I can go row by row, starting with me. We've all got one. There are no new sins under the sun. We've all got one. We've got something that nails us all the time, every day, for a lifetime. He says, you know what? Lay it down. Put it down. It's slowing you down. You're not going to win living this way. Let us run with endurance, with patience, the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider Him who endured such hostility from sinners against Himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your eyes on the prize. He is the prize. You say, I can't take this anymore. I can't do this anymore. I'm afraid. I don't know how we're going to make it. A couple called our house, dear friends of ours. He lost his job. She had a job, and they have a personal conviction that they will not work on Sundays. He's done this for years. He'd come to Apparel Market here in Dallas, and anybody that hired him knew he would not work on Sunday. If you go back and watch the movie Chariots of Fire, I think Eric Liddell, however you pronounce his last name, a guy back in the 1912 Olympics, I think, would not compete on Sunday, and he was not able to try out or to do the elimination round in the 100 meter. But he went on that week, I think, to qualify and won a gold medal in the 400 meter. And God used his testimony. And this couple is in New York right now, and I think part of the reason she got laid off, fired from this job, is that she came down here and someone didn't tell them here that she wouldn't work on Sunday. You say, well, that's crazy. You know what? It's a conviction she has. It's not crazy if it's yours. But I'm going to tell you something, they're suffering right now, but God's going to honor that. And I think I read that someone slipped a note, and if I can find this, I'll read it, I think I have it in here. Someone slipped a note to Eric Liddell at those races, and it had 1 Samuel 2:30 written on it, "Them that honor me, I will honor." Do the right thing. You say, Richard, but you don't know how expensive it is. It's costing me my job, my life. It may cost me my marriage. Do the right thing. It's worth it. If you keep your eyes on the right prize, guys, it is worth it every step of the way. 2 Timothy 2, verse 5, and you go back and read this, but talking about being a strong pastor and leader here, talking to Timothy, Paul says, "And also, if anybody competes in athletics, he is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules." God says there are boundaries in life. You want to win in a relationship and get married one day? I have couples call me all the time. Not married, having sex together. It doesn't work. It may work, but it doesn't work. God says there's boundaries. I created marriage, one man for one woman. Sex within that union, within that relationship. And you don't have any peace outside of that. You have nothing but guilt and shame and problems outside of that. It's a beautiful thing when it's where it belongs. It's a disaster outside of that. You say, I don't agree. Then keep trying it your way. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. And God's not trying to withhold any good thing from you. He just says, I've got a plan. There are rules, there are guidelines, there are parameters, there are margins, and you've got to stay within them if you're going to qualify and be in this game and win it the way I've designed for you to.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellis.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the Talks page, along with all of Richard's audio and video messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link so you can connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, all of our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellis.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
2 Timothy chapter 4. Now, I've kind of given you some scripture, Paul early on, kind of in the middle-ish, so to speak, and then at the end. Here's Paul at the end. Now listen to what he says. You say, well, this won't apply to me. I'm not at the end. You know what? You don't know where you are. This could be the last day of your life. You say, well, that's morbid. No, that's real. Hit the finish line. Paul says in 2 Timothy 4:7, I have fought the good fight. Remember his analogy about fighting, not shadow boxing? I fought the good fight. I have finished the race. What a feeling. But there was such relief. Paul says, I've fought the good fight. I finished the race. I made it. I have kept the faith. Finally. And man, aren't we all going to say that sooner or later? Finally. there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." You know why we ought to love his appearing? Because he's the prize. Keep your eye on the prize.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellis.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, it's the best way to stay up to date with all the audio and video talks with Richard, post on the prayer wall, how you can join the team, and even a place where you can ask any questions you have to get straight biblical answers. Check it out, richardellis.com. Finally, we're grateful when you help us with the cost to bring you this program. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website, richardellis.com. That's 855-6-RICHARD, or richardellis.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.